It is Sunday evening, July 12th. The world feels a little more volatile than it did this morning, so let's get you caught up. The Strait of Hormuz is back in the headlines. Tensions between the United States and Iran have escalated, with reports of military posturing in the region. This follows the collapse of the June ceasefire agreement. Diplomatic efforts are currently stalled, and there is significant concern regarding the role of regional mediators like Qatar, who have seen their diplomatic channels effectively shut down as the situation deteriorates. Inside Iran, the situation is murky. There is ongoing speculation regarding the succession of power, specifically concerning Mehtaba Khamenei, that is Mashtiehba Khamenei, following reports of his father's death. While he has issued threats of vengeance, there is no public confirmation of his current status or who is currently directing policy in Tehran. For the rest of the world, this is a recipe for disaster. Without a clear chain of command, the risk of a massive miscalculation is through the roof. We are already seeing the economic fallout. Oil prices, which had finally started to settle down, are spiking again. If this stays hot, Australian petrol pumps are going to feel it in the next few weeks. It is a direct hit to household budgets, which is a hell of a way to start the quarter. Meanwhile, the markets are trying to balance all this geopolitical chaos with the start of earnings season. You have got a bizarre split happening right now. On one side, traditional banks like J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs are the darlings of Wall Street. Analysts have almost zero sell ratings on them, which makes me nervous. It suggests the market is ignoring the possibility that we might see slower growth by 2027 or 2028. On the other side of the ledger, it is all about semiconductors. Investors are obsessively watching companies like Taiwan Semiconductor and ASML. That is ASML. The big question is whether these companies are still supply constrained. If they say demand is normalizing, the AI trade might be hitting its ceiling. If they keep talking about capacity bottlenecks in 2-nanometer production and advanced packaging, it means that AI infrastructure spending still has a long runway. Underneath all of this, we are waiting for the June Consumer Price Index and Producer Price Index data. The expectation is that headline inflation drops to 3.7%. If that happens, the market can breathe. If it comes in high, the interest rate math changes immediately. Pause. Look, here is the thing. You have a direct collision between global security and domestic cost of living concerns. When the Strait of Hormuz is on fire, energy prices don't just stay in the Middle East. They travel. They move through logistics chains and show up in corporate operating expenses and your monthly bills. The market consensus right now is betting on steady growth, but that feels like a reach. If the inflation data misses or the conflict in the Gulf drags on, companies are going to have to scramble to update their guidance. It is a fragile setup. We are looking at a market that is betting on logic and stability just as the geopolitical ground is shifting underneath it. It is not exactly the most comforting place to be, but that is where we are. That instability is a hell of a backdrop for everything else happening. Speaking of things being pushed to the breaking point, let's look at how the Justice Department is handling dissent. Federal prosecutors in North Texas recently secured convictions against a group of protesters at an ICE detention center. The defendants were accused of property damage, including graffiti and broken cameras. The government spent the trial attempting to paint the defendants as a coordinated Antifa cell, leaning heavily into expert testimony about anarchist literature and symbols to build that narrative. Here is the thing, though. The jury did not actually need to believe Antifa exists to find these people guilty. The convictions relied on a broad interpretation of federal material support laws. Under Section 2339A of the United States Code, the threshold is incredibly low. If you have an intent to break the law and cause over $1,000 in property damage, you meet the criteria for a terror charge. The government basically used graffiti and broken cameras to trigger a sentencing framework usually reserved for cartels or national security threats. They did not need to prove an organizational structure. They just needed to prove the property damage happened. It is a hell of a template. Now, any act of civil disobedience that results in minor damage can be legally categorized as terrorism. That is how you turn a misdemeanor protest into a life-altering prison sentence. It is not about the ideology of the group. It is about the utility of the statute. We see a similar focus on institutional utility in the career of Senator Lindsey Graham. He has served for 23 years in the Senate and remains a fixture of transactional politics. He does not prioritize staying ideologically consistent. He prioritizes staying in the room. When the Republican Party shifted from the traditional establishment to a populist model under Donald Trump, Graham did not fight the tide. He pivoted. He traded his ideological friction for proximity to the executive branch. This allowed him to maintain influence on specific priorities like Ukraine funding and NATO expansion. He is a creature of the institution, and he recognizes that the institution has changed. He understands that in a polarized environment, personal capital and access are worth more than a rigid set of principles. There is a weird symmetry here. In North Texas, the government is using the law to bypass the messiness of proving ideology. They are just using the procedural hammer to get the result they want. In Washington, Graham uses the exact same logic. He bypasses the messiness of ideological purity to ensure he can still pull the levers of power. Both cases show that if you want to win in this climate, you stop worrying about what you actually represent and you start worrying about what tools you can use. It is getting harder to find anyone operating on the old model of principled governance. We are seeing a systemic hardening of these lines across the board. The U.S. Elections Assistance Commission is effectively gutted, with reports indicating all remaining commissioners have been removed. The administration calls it an election security measure, which is a hell of a thing to say with a straight face while simultaneously removing all oversight. Meanwhile, small business owners are now baking their political platforms directly into their business models. They aren't trying to appeal to everyone anymore. They are trying to solidify a base and alienate the other side. When you look at the dismantling of environmental protections or the use of lethal force against protesters, the pattern is the same. It is not about the stated mission. It is about the consolidation of influence. Whether it is a prosecutor stretching a terror statute to get a long sentence or a senator pivoting to stay close to a president, the goal is the same. They are neutralizing resistance by removing the guardrails. It is efficient. It is effective. And honestly, it is pretty cynical. We are living in a moment where the process has been completely stripped of its pretense. If you have the power to redefine the rules, you do not need to argue about the merits anymore. You just move the goalposts until you win. Using the law as a hammer is one way to keep order, I guess, but it doesn't solve the long-term problems. If you want to talk about fixing things that are actually broken, we should look at the human body. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel recently laid out a framework for longevity that ignores most of what you see on social media. He argues that human health is not a project to be optimized, but a baseline for being useful. Forget the biohacking, the unregulated peptides, and the pursuit of biological perfection. His rules are boring by design. Eat fiber, move your body, and get enough sleep. But the real headline here is that the most significant predictor of a long life is social connection. According to the Harvard Adult Development Study, which has been running for 85 years, loneliness is physically comparable to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That is a hell of a thing to realize when you consider how much effort we spend on specialized diets compared to how little we spend on actually showing up for the people around us. There is a weird, frantic energy in how we approach wellness today. We treat the body like a machine that just needs a software update, but the evidence suggests we are actually losing the plot. By trying to hack our biology, we often introduce risks like cancer or systemic instability that outweigh the supposed benefits. It turns out that the secret to a functional life might just be the kind of stuff our parents did, like forcing kids to handle their own playground conflicts instead of micromanaging their every move. Resilience is not something you download from an app. It is built in the dirt, through trial and error, and by actually talking to the people you disagree with. If you feel like you are perpetually running on a hamster wheel, you are not alone. You might just be suffering from what historically was called acedia. That is acedia. It is not just laziness. It is a form of spiritual apathy where we use constant, frantic busyness to avoid the heavy lifting of internal reflection. When you have a moment of boredom or grief, your instinct is probably to reach for a screen or a task. That is a defense mechanism. We are terrified of sitting still, because stillness forces us to confront our own reality. This constant motion destroys our capacity for empathy. If you are always moving, you never take the second look required to actually understand someone else. You default to labels. You call someone lazy or angry because it is faster than doing the work of figuring out why they are acting that way. It is a reductive way to move through the world. The alternative is stability. It is the practice of staying put in your relationships and your commitments, even when things get dull. You have to be willing to endure the monotony to find the depth underneath. Then there is the question of why we are doing any of this in the first place. You can eat your fiber and stay off the hamster wheel, but if you do not have a vision for your life, you are just drifting. You are going to end up living out a script written by someone else. That is the argument for what is essentially self-authoring, the idea that you have to consciously build a narrative for your future to keep the chaos at bay. When you fail to set your own targets, you become a pawn. You end up filling the gaps left by people who are more ambitious than you, which is exactly how institutions collapse. It is easy to think that your personal life is separate from the state of your community, but that is a mistake. A 90-minute weekly management meeting with your spouse is not just a chore. It is a micro-precedent for the kind of civic engagement that prevents tyranny. If you do not maintain your own house, you have no business complaining about the neighborhood. We are looking at a weird tension here. One side says stop trying to hack your body and start building community. The other side says stop running from your own head and start taking responsibility for your narrative. They are not contradictory. They are two sides of the same coin. Whether it is your blood pressure or your political system, the fix is rarely an extreme intervention. It is consistent, boring, and deliberate work. It is showing up. It is staying put. It is deciding what actually matters and then doing the damn work to get there. Stop looking for a shortcut. There isn't one. It turns out the secret to longevity is just as boring as you feared. A few other things worth knowing today. First, researchers are looking at intranasal vaccines as a way to trigger mucosal immunity. By delivering the vaccine through the nose, it creates a systemic defense that protects distant areas like the reproductive tract. It is a smart way to stop an infection before it finds a foothold. Then there is the grim reality of life after professional sports. Many elite athletes see their health crater the moment they retire, because they spent years playing through injuries like full-thickness rotator cuff tears. They burned their physical future to chase a short-term paycheck. It is a hell of a lesson on why sacrificing your long-term infrastructure for a single championship roster spot is a shitty way to run a life. That is the state of things for tonight. Take a breath, get some rest, and I will see you tomorrow.